As for today's conversation, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to welcome you all to this episode of Campfire Conversations. Today's guest is legendary big mountain skier, Chris Davenport, who I'm just incredibly excited to have in the room here. I just want to kind of tee this up by saying, if you've been in Campfire Conversations before, you know, the goal of the space is to really create a place where athletes and people in the outdoor industry can really just show up as their authentic selves. And that is with the amazing parts of themselves, as well as the imperfections, right? Because when we show up as who we really are, we show up imperfections and all. And the goal is to really create a space where they can share some of their wisdom and their life stories with us. So tonight's guest is Chris Davenport. He's a ski legend. I mean, there's really no other way to describe him. He won the Extreme Skiing Championship. He is an X Games medalist. He won the 24 Hours of Aspen. He, maybe most impressively, skied all 54 of Colorado's 14ers in a single year, which if you've been to Colorado and even hiked a 14er, you know what an accomplishment that is. He's the author of Ski the 14ers and 50 Classic Ski Descents of North America. He's been in over 20 ski films, including some Warren Miller and Matt Schick Productions. He was inducted into the Skiing Hall of Fame in 2014. And maybe most importantly, he is a father. Chris, welcome to Campfire Conversations.
Thanks, Grant. Thanks, Kareen. Thanks, everybody, for joining. This is exciting. I love how you guys set the stage here coming into this conversation. And it's funny, being yourself seems like it should be really, really easy. But when you have a wonderful introduction like Grant just did, it feels like I'm supposed to be some kind of superhero or something like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, even athletes and I don't know, people that we look up to and idolize or whatever are just people, and they can be quite normal. And sometimes it's funny, I think of my career and all the things I've done and kind of scratch my head and like, how did that happen? My intention all along was just to be a skier. I just loved being out in the mountains and the connection to nature and the beauty of being outdoors, and was able to turn that into a career. And but I certainly, you know, never was expecting or thinking about or looking for wonderful introductions like you just made. So I appreciate that. And, you know, it's been a wonderful sort of 25, 26, 27 year career so far, and continues to provide me with a lot of joy and a lot of challenge. And as you said, Grant, I think my greatest feat is not any of those competition wins or films or big mountaineering projects. It's the fact that I've been married for 22 years and have three amazing boys and have a wonderful relationship. And that's considering how much I traveled all over the world during that time, that's the most amazing thing, I think, to me and all of the family.
Yeah. And thanks for that, Chris. I really appreciate that. I had actually had some questions I wanted to ask, but I'd love to just dive in a little bit into what you just said, because it's funny, I have found on here that some folks have that same sense of, you know, there's this list of accomplishments I have, and there's this perception of who I am versus maybe who I actually feel I am. And how have you dealt with that tension throughout your career of just showing up as yourself, as opposed to this greater than, you know, greater than life hero or list of accomplishments?
Yeah, it's a great question. I certainly have never felt like there was really any tension there or even maybe expectation. I've always had a certain degree of self-confidence, I guess. And I'm not sure if that came from being a young student athlete. I think it probably did, because when you, I was a ski racer and a bike racer growing up, and you learn to fail, and you learn to fail spectacularly as an athlete. You know, rarely are you standing on the podium, but you're trying your best all the time. And you gain a certain degree of self-confidence, I think, going through that. And then kind of throughout my career as a guide and ski camp operator, in providing opportunity for skiers and consumers to actually interact with us, with myself, I've had numerous interactions where clients, you know, came and skied with me and had this kind of idea in their head that I was like this, like I said earlier, like this like superhero. And at the end of a week, they're like, oh my gosh, we're great friends now. And you're just like a normal person. And I've gotten these like wonderful notes and emails saying like, I don't know, built it up in my mind because of all you've done that you were something that then I met you and you were something completely different. So I've just kind of seen that time and time again. And I guess to really answer your question, my strategy is always just be myself. And that seems to always work and not try to be something that you're not or someone that you're not. Or I just kind of strive to be comfortable in my own skin. And yeah, that's a strategy that's always played out really well. And kind of thinking about my children nowadays, I mean, I grew up before the internet, as many of us did, and many of you on here did not. I guess it was easier. And now I see my kids who are 20, 18, and 13, you know, what they're seeing online and in social media every single day is a lot of powerful images of people doing incredible things or looking one way or the other. And I feel like it must be a lot more challenging to be comfortable in your own skin because of this constant bombardment of imagery around beauty and perfection and going big and, you know, only always skiing powder and on and on and on. And it's just not how the world works, is it?
Yeah, I agree. And I think since you can see almost all, you know, you could see probably about 2 billion of the 7 billion people on the planet on the internet, you're going to see some pretty wild and incredible things, right? And that might push you to perceive the world in a little bit of a different way than what we usually have. So, you know, with regards to your kids, is there any way you've tried to raise them or advice that you've given them so that they don't feel that way about themselves, so that they do feel that they are enough or that they don't have to meet a certain expectation that they see online?
Yeah, I have absolutely strived to, I guess, expand their understanding of the world by traveling with them. I was fortunate enough when I was young to travel with my family and see lots of different places. And I absolutely feel like that gave me a perspective on the world, a broader perspective and not a narrow-minded perspective. And so I think that the travel side of things has been really helpful. And the great thing about being a skier is that it can take you all over the world to many cultures and many places. And certainly it's a sport of privilege. I will absolutely acknowledge that. But at the same time, you know, I've been able to ski on all 7 continents and I've taken my kids to 4 of them. And I think just, yeah, for them being able to see how different people live and how different people work and survive is super important. And we've also had lots of important conversations around responsible use of the internet and social media and, what you see isn't always the way things work. And, certainly for my children growing up in Aspen, Colorado, which is a wonderful yet extremely robust bubble. it's not the real world. It's important for us to get out of here and go other places. And so my 2 older boys have gone to school in the East Coast and lived in New England. And one of them's now back in Colorado. One of them still, or 2 of them are in New Hampshire. And so just like living other places, my youngest son lives with a Chinese roommate and I'm hoping he gets invited to go visit him in China sometime, which I think would be really cool. So yeah, just, I don't know, a more global perspective, a worldly perspective on issues and that different cultures face, I think is necessary and important. And again, I'll just say like, not everyone has access to that. So it is a little bit of a privileged kind of thing to be able to travel and see the world a different way, but it's super important.
Yeah. And I'd love to get into that conversation maybe another time, but I see Kit DeLaurier's in the room and her and I were actually just talking about, you know, access to skiing because it's not very accessible for people.
No, it's not. It's been one of my sort of pillars philanthropy, really. I've tried or continue to try to raise money to allow people who wouldn't otherwise have the means to in our community in the valley here in Colorado to be able to ski. I serve as the board president of the Aspen Valley Ski Club, and we've got 2,400 kids in our programs, including 400 Latino families. And we, this last 2 years, have given free ski equipment to all of those families, as well as like really significant financial assistance to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to get on the hill and everyone has the opportunity to learn and be coached and just experience this wonderful thing that we know, and Kit knows as well as anybody, the connection to the great outdoors. You know, in Corinne and Elise's intro to this shred space, to this conversation, you were talking about, you know, Asian hate and these terrible things that are happening. And I just feel like if more people could be outdoors and could experience outdoor sports and have a connection to nature, there would be less of that. And perhaps that's a naive perspective, but I kind of believe that connection to nature breeds love and breeds equality and understanding. And when you're sort of locked up in a community that's one race and one view, that breeds the opposite. And I don't want to go down that road too far, because I'm not an expert in that. But I just, I'm a big believer in getting anyone and everyone that we possibly can into the mountains and into the outdoors.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's awesome. And we'll cover as much as we can here. Also, just quick reset on the room, everyone. We're here with Chris Davenport, legendary skier, but also wonderful human. We're just breaking it down, and we will have some time at the end for some questions from the audience. So if you do want to come up here and ask him something, please stick around. There will be time for that at the end. So Chris, when we initially set this up, we were kind of going back and forth on maybe some topics to cover, and you actually raised a topic that I haven't explicitly spoken about in the past five shows we've done, and that was really actually about COVID. And it was funny, it got me thinking about why I hadn't really broached that explicitly with anyone, and I realized, you know, we are so deeply living inside of this world right now. It's almost like being a fish in the ocean. You know, COVID just really pervades everything we're doing. And I hadn't even really thought to explicitly discuss that with people in these conversations. So I guess I'm kind of wondering, you know, how has COVID maybe turned your life upside down?
Yeah, I mean, I like the fish in the ocean analogy, because COVID does affect everyone around the world. And I mean, I'm certainly looking at it through the lens of the outdoor industry and mountain town communities. To just answer your specific question, how it's affected me, I spend a lot of time each year taking clients, skiers around the world on adventures. And basically none of that happened this past year in 2020 and even into early 2021, where I typically am in Japan. So that's like 40% of my income typically. So, you know, financially it's been a bit of a hardship. But I've also had a little more, I guess, time to spend with the family, who was all here in the house all spring and summer, which was incredible. I mean, that probably will never happen again as my kids are older and we're empty nesters. But it also, in not going down to Chile to ski guide for a month and not going on these other trips, it gave me a lot more time to pursue my other passions, like cycling and rock climbing and really just rediscover my own backyard in many ways. I mean, I live in the Roaring Fork Valley of Colorado in the Elk Mountains outside of Aspen for a reason. I find it just completely incredible in terms of inspiration and motivation as an athlete. And so, yeah, there's been lots of silver linings, as we all know. There's lots of terrible things that have happened and continue to happen, but there's also been these little bright spots. And for me, it's been having all this time with my boys and my wife and finding new adventures in my own backyard, which was kind of my my mission for the summer, I put, 10,000 kilometers on my bike, which is 6,300 miles or something, and riding around, Colorado and other places, and just found myself out in roads that I'd never been on and trails that I'd never been on. And so that was amazing. And, I'm not sure if that will actually ever happen again, because I'm already getting busier and busier. And so, I enjoyed that. So yeah, I mean, there was financial hardships and, but those were overshadowed by the sort of joy of being together as a family for so long and, getting super fit and, which was awesome. And just, yeah, enjoying being home here. And I've kind of pivoted the business and from skiing internationally and to just skiing with folks and around Colorado and sharing my knowledge and passion for the sport, more locally. And the other good thing with that is I've totally reduced my carbon footprint by, I don't know what the percentage is, but by a ton. And that feels really good as well.
Yeah. Did this whole situation make you rethink at all your perspective on the future of humanity?
Yes. You know, that's, wow. I mean, that's a profound question. And it's funny, my 13-year-old and I love to have these deep conversations around things like the future and humanity and the universe and, you know, the kind of things that you would sit around a campfire and just discuss with a young man. And yeah, I'm seriously concerned about the future of humanity, whether it's because of things like a global pandemic or something that's been very kind of near and dear to my heart as an activist, which is climate change and global warming and the effects that anthropogeny, which is human effects on our planet, are having. Gosh, it's hard to see a really, really rosy future out there. I mean, I'm an optimist in life in general, but unless we all rally together as a human race and try to pump the brakes on a lot of the growth and development and fossil fuel use and things, we're really digging ourselves a deeper and deeper hole. So, I mean, I hate to be a fatalist. I certainly am a happy person, but I am concerned that I might leave my children with, you know, more problems than I had as a young, and that's just not fair. And, you know, whether it's more debt or a worse climate or more social unrest. I mean, this is not fair for us to pass these problems along to the next generation. And so, through my work with Protect Our Winters and other charitable organizations, I'm trying to do my best. And, you know, I'm just one person. But I think it's important that we all at least try to do something. And if everyone tries around the world, then we can make a difference. Probably only if 50% of the people try, we can still make a difference. But there's a lot of people, I think, that are ambivalent and either don't care or don't have the means to do anything. And that's a shame.
Yeah. And I mean, I love the work Protect Our Winters does. I'm realizing Protect Our Winters has been around for quite a while now, and they've just done some unbelievable work. It's always funny to see Jeremy Jones in a suit going up to Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
And I know you've been a part of that work, so thank you for everything you do. You do strike me as a naturally kind of optimistic person, Chris. And I'm wondering if you have any sense of where that comes from.
Oh, that's a good question. I've never really thought about where it comes from. I just find that being, I don't know, kind of leading with positivity is a great trait to have. When I think of, I do a lot of public speaking, like corporate groups and slideshows and you know, presentations for groups and things. And one of the things that I have, I guess, defined in my own career as the successful, or not one of the few things that I've defined as the successful attributes of my career. And perhaps you guys might think of them as attributes that have been part of yours as well. There's four things that have really allowed me to succeed as a person and be a happy human. The first one is passion. I just love what I do. I love being outdoors. I love skiing. I love being an athlete and being healthy and being active, and just kind of just your question led me to this. Leading with positivity, leading with passion is just when you meet someone that has passion, like, and, you know, is it kind of effusing that, or it's coming out of them, you're like, wow, okay, that's kind of a powerful attribute. So that's super important. And then the second one is vision. So like, if you love something, what's your vision of how you're going to use it or work with it or I don't know, have it motivate you. And I've just had this vision of like being a skier and taking, it's not that I early on like wanted to be a pro skier. I didn't even know what that was, or maybe it wasn't even a thing. I just wanted to ski and explore mountains. And my vision was just to try to do that as much as I possibly can. And of course that's evolved over time, especially with projects like going to climb and ski 14,000 foot peaks, or skiing all seven continents, or skiing in the Himalaya, whatever it might be. Having some vision there is key. And then the third one is perseverance. You know, times get tough, right? You fail a lot. Sometimes you got to turn around. Sometimes you get injured. I've certainly had my share of injuries. You gotta have a thick skin and toughen up, especially in this age of social media. And you can kind of get beat down here and there. And it's like, listen, I'm going to fight through this because I know it's right. I'm having fun. Feels good. It's the right thing to do. So that perseverance and toughness is something I really try to impart on my children. Cause I think life is going to continue to get more difficult in many ways, perhaps in the future. So I want my kids to be tough, and not tough in like a put up a fist fight kind of way, just, you know, be able to grow a thick skin, have things bounce off them. And then the final thing that I've kind of defined as a successful sort of key performance attribute is teamwork, right? Like surrounding yourself with great people is an amazing way to get shit done. And it raises your own ability. Like I can't tell you how many great partners I've had out in the mountains, how many great people I've worked with at brands, at ski resorts, as with guides, other incredible people. And that has absolutely elevated my game. I never would say that I was the best skier out there, by no means. I know so many underground incredible skiers and athletes, but I was able to surround myself with people that helped me find the best in myself, and kind of that raised me up to a place that I never imagined I could go. So that passion, vision, perseverance, and teamwork concept is, I think, what has gotten me where I am, I guess. I hope that's not too heady here in this conversation, but like, I really think about these things. And again, as a parent, like the first thing with my kids, I'm like, I don't care what you guys do with your life, as long as you're a passionate person and you love something, and it can be whatever, maybe not video games, but maybe that's fine too. Yeah. But,
With Twitch now, you never know, huh?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that's a long winded answer, but thanks for that question. That was good.
No, Chris, that was perfect. And that I want to say that the thing I really appreciate about these sessions, I do think people come here to maybe say, okay, I'm thinking about doing this thing or that thing in my life. And, you know, maybe they're looking for a little nudge or a little advice. So this is exactly where I was hoping to go. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, here's another thing, just in terms of like people that are thinking about things. I mean, the hardest thing sometimes is to pull the trigger and say, yes, I'm going to do this. Like we're going to try this thing. And I actually, when I think of what I do professionally, I think of myself as a professional risk manager, you know, whether I'm out in the mountains guiding or I'm doing my own ski project, I'm constantly thinking about the downside risk. Like what's the worst that can happen in any situation. And when I'm thinking about a big project, a ski mountaineering project, for instance, I'm balancing that. Okay. The worst that can happen is, well, I could probably die in the mountains somehow with an avalanche or a fall or whatever. But I'm pretty comfortable in my own skin, skiing and with my skills. So yeah, maybe that's not going to happen. If it does, you know, might not be my fault. Maybe it is, but the upside risk of this is that it increases, my, I don't know, reputation. Perhaps there's some financial gain. Perhaps there's just, it makes you spiritually more rich and or more empowered. So there's so much upside. So I'm constantly thinking about like, what can I gain from this versus what can I lose, I guess is one way to put it. And I get people that email me or get in touch through Instagram or whatever all the time, like, hey, I've been thinking about climbing, skiing this mountain, but I don't really know. And I love those conversations because that was me like 30 years ago. Like, what am I capable of? Well, how do you know what you're capable of unless you take that step? And it was funny. I was actually today skiing on the mountain with this client, and we were talking about philosophy. This kid, he's a graduate PhD candidate at Harvard in philosophy, which is like so deep that I can't even understand what he's really doing. But we were just talking about like what motivates people. And I have this quote that I really like from the American poet T.S. Eliot. And it was, it goes, only those who will risk going too far can possibly find out how far they can go. Which is just so awesome. It's like so much of America seems to be risk averse and stuck on the hamster wheel, and they just don't want to take any chance at anything. And you'll never know what you as a human are capable of unless you take that chance. And you know what? You might fail. And that's actually a good thing. You're going to learn from it. But if you succeed, it's even better. And then you're like, oh, well, I did that thing. Now here's the next thing, and here's the next thing. So pushing yourself in that way, I think, is so valuable. And that's been me. Every I can look back on my career, and every step of the way I did one thing and I went, oh, okay, I can do that. And then there's the next sort of glass ceiling to break through, and then the next one. And Kit will appreciate this, because I'm sure people told her when I climbed Mount Everest as a guide and was in a, we did some skiing on the Lhotse face and stood on the summit and came down, and people were like, after that, people were like, all right, one more challenge. It just opens the door to the next thing that you're capable of. And it doesn't necessarily just have to be the highest or the steepest. There's so many more things out there, like writing books, for instance. Oh my gosh, like what a daunting project full of anxiety that I took on a couple times. But boy, when those things were done, man, so satisfying. So challenge comes in all shapes and forms.
Yeah, thanks. That was pretty inspirational right there, Dav. I really enjoyed that.
Thanks.
No, really. I want to ask you a question here that's a little bit from the negative space, but there's an intention behind this. Was there ever a time where you did not take that step or that risk and you regretted it?
That's a good one. Nothing is like jumping to mind right now. I mean, honestly, I feel like I've lived my life, at least my adult life, with a lot of sense of purpose and kind of intentionality, if you will. I've always been a big fan of goal setting. So I every year I'm writing a list of goals and kind of thinking or focusing, I guess, on these things and their outcomes. And so while certainly some trips fail and you turn around in the mountains here and there, I can't really think of a time where I said, hey, I'm not going to do this, and then really regretted it. I feel like that's almost kind of arrogant to say, but honestly, the intentional side of me is like pretty, it's pretty focused.
Yeah. And no pressure to tell us about a time if it did not actually.
I can think of one recently. We in February, my wife and I thought it would be a great idea to have a dry February. So like no drinking. And we started out pretty good, and then we failed miserably. And I kind of like regret that. So that's been one of the, COVID like non-silver linings. I guess we've been drinking more, and we're like, all right, we're not going to drink at all in February. And then we started a week or two in or something. And I felt pretty embarrassed that I couldn't get through a month.
All right. Well, we won't hold you to that one too much.
Good, thanks.
So there's another thing I want to address here, because in some of what you were talking about in terms of the downside risks, you know, you did mention death, and I, in the run up to this interview, watched a series that Red Bull had produced on you, called The Faces of Dav. So if anyone out there is really interested in getting to know Chris on kind of all the different levels he performs at, from being like almost an engineer to a mountaineer to a father, there's this really great little miniseries that was produced in 2014 called The Faces of Dav. If you just Googled it, it's an 8-episode miniseries. It would come up. But in the first episode of that, Chris, you went to BC and in Bella Coola, and you were talking about how the last time that you had been there was in filming the movie Steep. And you had been filming with Seth Morrison, Doug Coombs, and Shane McConkie. And it hit me really hard. I'd never really put that together, that you had literally skied with Doug Coombs like 2 weeks before he passed away. And, you know, and then Shane died 3 years later. And I was just really wanted to hear from you, like how those deaths maybe affected you.
Yeah, well, I have serious goosebumps right now, and I'm a little choked up, actually. So those are my closest. Those were my closest friends, and we spent a ton of time in the mountains. And one reason why it's funny, people ask me sometimes, like, do you encourage your kids to follow in your footsteps, or do you want your kids to do what you do? And my answer is no. Certainly, I love that they're skiers and they appreciate the mountains, but man, what I do is really, really dangerous. And I've lost dozens and dozens and dozens of close friends in the mountains over the years. And you just mentioned two of them. You know, I met, so Doug was, if I could point to any single person as a mentor, Doug was my mentor. I met him in the early 90s on my first trip to South America, to Las Leñas, Argentina. And I was with some older friends from Aspen that I had gotten to know, and they brought me down and they knew Doug, and we skied together. And I immediately was attracted to him as a person and as a skier. And he kind of brought me under his wing, and I would go to Jackson and ski with him. And he hired me to his heli ski company in Alaska in 1996. And we skied together up there. And yeah, we were filming in Bella Coola for this documentary. It was produced by Peter Jennings Productions called Steep. And it was the history of extreme skiing. And Seth Morrison, Shane McConkie, Coombs, myself, and actually Eric Pahota. Also, Eric's a Canadian, pioneering Canadian extreme skier. And the final, we had this incredible film shoot. You got to watch the movie. It's really good. The final night, as we were wrapping up the shoot, everybody was flying out the next morning. We sat down at the dinner table, and Doug broke out a like mason jar of, what's the word, like alcohol from the French Alps. I don't know why it's made with like a flower. I don't know why I'm spacing the name of it. Anyway, this anise? Had come, say it again.
Anise.
It was not anise, but like
Matthias Giraud will know the answer. Matthias
Giraud. What is it with the little white flower?
Matthias is coming.
What's up, Chris? Are you talking about Genepi?
Yeah, je n'ai pas.
Yeah, je n'ai pas, absolument.
Yeah, thank you, Matthias.
Thank you, Matthias.
You're welcome. So, brother.
You know, Doug had found these flowers in the mountains of the Parc National de Écrins near La Grave, France, in the summer, and they had made this je n'ai pas, and he shared it with the group, and we just kind of had this incredible moment. I mean, we'd been bonding in the mountains for the last couple of weeks, but it was just this, like, I don't know, this moment of sharing something really special, and kind of everybody said goodbye and we went our separate ways. And this is 2006, and I flew back to Colorado and immediately went back to climbing, skiing the 14ers. I was on this project to try to finish them all, And so 2 weeks later, I'm coming out of the mountains into a trailhead, and I had a cell phone, like a Motorola. It wasn't a smartphone, and it just lit up with like 25 text messages. And I was like, oh my God, something's happened. Like, people are getting a hold of me. And every message was like, oh, I'm sorry to hear about Doug. And Doug Coombs had died in Le Grave. And he just seemed like one of those people that that would never happen to. He was so smart and so kind and so good on his feet on skis. And it really sent me into a period of soul searching, asking myself what I was doing. Why am I doing this? If someone like him can die, I mean, I've got two small kids at the time. I was down in Southern Colorado and went to this kind of remote, not Native American, but Spanish missionary church, like a historic old church, probably from like the 1650s that we happened to be driving past and on these country roads. And we pulled over and I sort of sat outside this place. It seemed like a spiritual place, and just kind of wept for a while and, you know, just tried to wrap my head around it. And over a period of time, I definitely realized that Doug would not want me to be sitting there feeling sorry for myself or sorry for him. He would want me to be getting after it. And so it was actually, I kind of used it as motivation in many ways to finish this project. And really the same thing was true of Shane McConkey a few years later. I was out on a filming trip with Matchstick Productions in Canada, and we came back from filming all day back to the lodge. And, one of the producers told us that Shane had died filming in Italy, and another same type of situation, just complete shock and awe. Although I will say in Shane's case, I did think that that might happen someday because he was really pushing the boundaries of base jumping and wingsuit flying and ski base jumping. And ultimately that's what got him. So, those things, gosh, it's funny. I feel like one analogy I use is like, if people say like, oh, you have kids now and, you know, you must not take as much risk. Well, I think the kids thing actually made me like a better risk manager. So I just was smarter, but I didn't want to slow down. I didn't want to change what I was doing. I just wanted to learn from these people who are no longer with us. Death is hard and it happens all too frequently in the mountains, as many of you guys know. And, but what do? You just say, okay, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to change my life because I'm too afraid of dying. You know, if you're a race car driver and you have children, are you going to drive slower because you're afraid of crashing? No, you're a race car driver. That's like what you do. I mean, I'm a ski mountaineer. It's like what I do. I just thank those people that are no longer with us for helping me be smarter and better at it.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing and being vulnerable. I've not ever heard that story before. And I did not realize you were that close with them. So thank you.
Yeah. I mean, those were, again, as I said, Doug was the mentor that I point to that sort of set me on the path of my career. And Shane was the person that I traveled with most as a pro, filming, especially with Matchstick Productions, but also competing, you know. And in fact, I'll tell you two more quick stories. When I moved to Aspen, Colorado from Boulder, I was ski racing at the University of Colorado. Shane and I had known each other growing up as teenagers in Vermont and New Hampshire. Shane was at Burke Mountain Academy. I was at Holderness School. And we arrived at CU Boulder as freshmen together on the ski team. And Shane only lasted a year and a half in Boulder, and he just couldn't handle the structure of the institution, or the education. And he dropped out of school and moved to Vail and began pursuing a career as a professional skier. I finished college and moved to Aspen and was coaching ski racing up here. And Shane called me in, I think, January or maybe February of 1994. He's like, hey, we're going down to Crested Butte for the U.S. Extreme Skiing Championships. You should come down here and meet us and check it out. I didn't even know what that was. I hadn't heard of that event, but I was like, okay, cool. I'm psyched to go hang out with Shane again. And so I drove down to Crested Butte, did my first ever extreme skiing contest, which we now call free ride or free ski contest, and had the time of my life. Felt like I met my people, like a group of people that I could identify with that loved the mountains. I had so much fun with Shane, and that set me on the path to then go compete in South America and qualify for the world championships in Alaska. And in 96, my first time to Alaska, my first time ever in a helicopter, first time at the World Extreme Skiing Championships. I've competed for 3 days. The finals are over and we're in the Valdez Convention Center with like 1,000 people. The whole town turns out. And I knew I had skied well, but I certainly didn't think I had won. And they're reading the results. People are coming up to the podium and it's like, you know, fifth place from Sun Valley and then fourth place from Crested Butte and third place from Squaw Valley, Kent Kreitler, and second place from Squaw Valley, California, Shane McConkie. And I'm like, shit, man, I got like 11th. And then it's like first place from Aspen, Colorado. And again, I get choked up telling that story. And Shane and I stood on that podium together. And it was like one of the moments I look back as like the most joyous time in my career. It was so awesome. I was so young and sort of naive and just was, oh, I don't know, over the moon. So when I think of Shane, I think of those types of memories.
Yeah, that's so cool. I guess sometimes outward perception is not the most accurate indicator of people's relationships. Because I always, you know, Chris, and this is no offense to you, I always look at you as sort of the straight man in skiing. You know, you've got the short hair, you never have the big beard, and Shane was like the super goofy dude. It's almost like you guys were the odd couple or something. But what do you think it is that connected you?
Oh, I think the first thing that comes to mind is just our love of having fun. We were constantly goofing around, joking around. Every moment in the mountains, even the serious ones, were fun. You know, he just had a certain aura about him that was positive and hilarious. There was always practical jokes and pranks happening. It just, I don't know, kind of just made everything that you did really fun. And sometimes I describe my work in skiing as being in the business of fun. Right. We build products that give people joy. We take people on trips that give them joy. Being with Shane gave me joy. It's all about having fun out there. And that's something that all of us need in our life. Right. Like life is serious and we have lots of responsibilities, whether it's family or business, you know, financial, personal, social responsibilities, whatever they might be. But you have to have an element of fun emotionally, and because it's healthy. And every time I came off a trip with Shane, I felt amazing. And I felt like, I don't know, I felt like he was taking me to the next level in many ways.
That's awesome. There's so much more I could ask you, Chris, but I do want to leave some time for some folks to come up and ask questions and stuff. I'm actually going to bring Kit up here because I don't know if she was wanting to ask you a question or to chime in on something or not. I saw a text ping over here. I'm not sure if that's what she was asking about. But right now, everyone, I want to open the room up. If anybody wants to come up and ask a question to Chris, please raise your hand. We don't bite. You can ask him anything. I'll just kind of start with some of the folks on the stage. If Kareen, Matthias, or Kit has anything they want to talk about. Looks like Kit unmuted herself. Kit, did you...
This is like... just about my first time on Clubhouse and I'm listening and I'm like, I have no clue how to even speak if I want to. So thanks for making that work. I'm in the background Googling, how do I speak on Clubhouse?
It's all good. We got you. For those of you who don't know Kit, she's a really legendary ski mountaineer. We're going to have her on here in 2 or 3 weeks. But she's also a great person. So thanks for coming up here, Kit.
Yeah. Well, I don't know as if I have any questions at the moment, but I do just really appreciate listening to you speak, Chris. So thank you so much for all that and the honesty. And I mean, I like jotted down even a few notes because you and I live somewhat parallel lives and also, you know, speaking with, you know, different organizations and small gatherings, public gatherings or whatever. And it's like, what piece of yourself do you choose to share? You know, I kind of say like in writing a book, it's a lot of people like to say to me that they know who I am now that I wrote this book. And I'm like, well, writing a book is just as much about what you don't include as what you do include.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's really interesting. This has been a great format and Yeah, I love what you were thinking about as a parent and how you can improve, because I'm constantly trying to improve. And it's one thing that I love to share with my kids as they watch me continue on my professional development, like ceaselessly. They're like, don't you already know this stuff? And I'm like, well, yeah, but.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I mean, it's funny. I think my kids sometimes like shake their heads and they're like, what is wrong with you, Dad? Like, settle down. I'm like, no, this is too fun. You know, it's like, you know, all summer long, I'd be like out of the house at 8, 9 and on my bike for like 5 hours. And they're like, why? They don't get it. And I don't expect them to get it, but hopefully someday they'll get it. But no, you're absolutely right. And we have been living parallel lives. And I wish I could spend more time with you and Rob and your family and Tetons and whatnot. One thing that you just mentioned that kind of about people sort of thinking that they know you. I read this really amazing analogy that, you know, people that see a lot of live music and love a musician sometimes think that, you know, they know the music really well. They've seen this musician tons of times and they think they know the person, but they just know the musician. They don't know the person. And so people have seen all our ski videos. They've, you know, read my books, whatever it might be. That's not necessarily like who I am as a person. That's just who I am as a professional. Right. So there's this like distinction that I've always tried to maintain a degree of separation with. I've got my professional career and then I'm a parent and just a regular person. And like, there's very few, if any, pictures of me skiing in our house. Like we don't sit around as a family and watch ski movies of me. We don't really talk about my professional career. Like, I just want them to know me as their dad and maybe a slightly obsessed athlete. But you know, when it's funny, like if I'm walking through like the Denver airport with my family and someone comes up and like says, hi, I love your work, or wants an autograph or something, my kids just roll their eyes and keep walking. They're like, they think it's pretty funny. I don't know. I like the separation though.
That's awesome. So once again, if anyone else has a question for Chris, please feel free to raise your hand and come up here. Anything goes, we don't bite. Actually, on that subject, Chris, I had wanted to ask you earlier, and it sounds like maybe the answer is no, but do you think your kids feel any pressure of like, oh, my dad's Chris Davenport, I've got to be this like amazing ski mountaineer?
No, I actually don't think they do feel any pressure. In fact, I think that they've established some pretty good, what's the word? Kind of like response mechanisms, you know, because like I'll go to their school and like some of their friends are like, oh my God, dude, your dad's here. Wow. This is so cool. Or what? And they're just like, stop. Like, he's just my dad, you know, like they've been around it enough that they are good at deflecting any kind of that sort of pro skier, blah, blah, blah stuff. And again, I don't want to be a pro skier in their eyes. I only want to be their father. There's been some really funny interactions over the years where I've been with my family and had like some kind of crazy fan come up and they're just like, oh my God, it's just, I don't know. They're kind of funny moments, but I we're sharing a lot of things on this clubhouse, on this conversation tonight, but I am quite a private person in general. We have never shared any social media stuff about our kids. I've never posted about my kids on Facebook. I've never shared anything on Instagram. Well, maybe I've shared a photo or two as a family on Instagram, but I've really tried to protect their privacy and have it like, again, a separation. I don't feel like I need to be like, here's my children, here's my family, look at what they're doing. You know, that's their life, and we'll keep that internal.
I really respect that. I'm gonna go over to Ian, who just came up. Ian, do you have a question for Chris?
Yeah, I'm sorry, you just mentioned that you keep your kids away. So as I heard that, I hope this doesn't affect the question. But as you grow up, getting to where you get takes a lot of discipline. I'm just wondering what the relationship of going through that kind of discipline as a child has changed in you to now being the father of those children and what discipline means in their lives.
I like that question. I was quite disciplined as a kid. Growing up in a ski racing family, that academics were important. We were always traveling for races. You had to take care of your skis. You know, there was workouts. There was a lot of discipline. And I think I think there was times when I was younger that I didn't like it. But I certainly look back on all of it now and am very happy that I kind of went through that process. It was 99% positive. My parents were not disciplinarians in that sense. They were just kind of driving us to be successful, I guess, in a really good way, not an overbearing way. And I, as a parent, have been a little more laissez-faire, a little more kind of, I don't know, open-minded and letting my kids discover and follow whatever passions that they want. So, gosh, I'm not sure that answers your question, but I'm a believer, I guess, in allowing, what do they call it? It's like the opposite of helicopter parenting. It's like free range, perhaps, I think.
Free range kids, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I even really know what that means, but I think I'm a subscriber to that idea of like letting them discover the things that are important, the things that make them feel good, and perhaps just being the facilitator, the person that can introduce any and all opportunities. So I've, you know, generally when our kids have asked about something, I've always been like, hell yeah, let's try it out. Let's go. Let's do that. Let's go check that place out. And so I'm definitely not a no person. I'm definitely a yes person in that respect. And Ian, again, I hope it answers your question.
Definitely did. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Great question, Ian. Once again, if you have a question for Chris, feel free to raise your hand. Come on up here. Corrine, oh, wait, we got one, another one. Jake Stone's about to come up here.
Nice, Jake.
Give Jake an opportunity to ask his question. Jake, how's it going?
Good, thank you. Yeah, this was great. Thanks for coming on, Chris. I'm also from Colorado. I'm down in Durango. So San Juan's are my spot. Yep. I just wanted to ask you about, you know, this year was, I'm a split boarder. I've been split boarding since 2003, I think. And this year was, as you know, particularly super high avy danger in Colorado, especially down in the San Juans. And the growth of backcountry skiers, the amount of backcountry skiers that have been out and about has multiplied tremendously. And I was just wondering what you felt, I mean, especially with COVID and everything, the ski areas are kind of limiting their amount of people they're having on. I was wondering what your thoughts were on the growth of backcountry skiing and just how you felt about that. Do you think that's a good thing for the mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. that might be a little growing too fast or?
Yeah, I actually feel like we could probably have an hour long clubhouse conversation on that topic. I'm very happy that backcountry skiing is the fastest growing segment of winter sports. It provides people so much connection to the outdoors and nature and fitness and health and well-being. I mean, the equipment has gotten so good. I think there's still plenty of room for people to get out in the backcountry. Of course, there are some spots, you know them in the San Juans, and they happen in the Front Range and they happen here in the Elks, that get really, really crowded. So it certainly is not growth without issues or without problems, but it's such a great experience. It would be hard to not be behind it or be for it. You know what I mean? Like we should be encouraging this, but with the growth also necessitates a growth of education, a growth of information, a growth of communication. And so I've been trying my best to work with friends of the CAIC, for those that don't know what that is, the Colorado Avalanche Information Center, to amplify messaging around avalanche education and around conditions and forecasts and warnings. As you mentioned, we had a pretty tragic year this year, I think 11 fatalities so far in Colorado. And during those times of high avalanche hazard, even considerable avalanche hazard, myself, other pro athletes, guides, the forecast center, we were all pushing out messaging around like, hey, pump the brakes right now. Don't go unless you can manage low angle terrain, or, you know, maybe this is just a time to go skin up the ski area if you want to do that. And, you know, sadly, some people either didn't listen or didn't hear the message, or maybe thought that they, you know, knew something different. I'm not going to armchair quarterback other people's incidents or accidents, but the interesting thing, Jake, is that most of the accidents in Colorado were not new people to the sport. They were people that had been doing backcountry skiing for many years and had experience. So that leads us to a totally different conclusion. I think everybody was worried this season that there was going to be all these newbies, all these rookies with skins and touring gear out there getting smoked in avalanches. And that's not what happened. It was people with experience. So I don't have a conclusion about that to share at the moment, but it's something that we definitely will look into, need to look into. People that understand the human factors a lot more than I do, I'm sure will be writing papers on it and presenting them. But I certainly would not, not encourage people to get educated and get the right gear and get out there, because it's awesome. But we just need to continue to push responsibility and education. And, by the way, I haven't, Jake, just to your, bio, I've not used a plastic water bottle in 3 years. Pretty happy about that.
Awesome. Thanks for that. Awesome. Yeah, that is a great, point you made there, is that there was a ton of people in the backcountry this year and a lot of newbies. And yeah, a lot of those incidents, especially, you know, down in the San Juan, as you know, were experienced skiers.
Yeah, you're right.
So yeah, you can look at the report. You can be like, oh, why'd they do that? You know, it's like you said, armchair quarterback, and it's, you're really, at the end of the day, you're really not going to know why they made their decisions. But yeah, thanks for answering that. And yeah, I agree. There's a ton of room out there, and the sport is great, and people should get out there and have fun.
Yeah. Funny, just one more comment. I was mentioning earlier, like talking about biking in the summer and like finding adventures in your own backyard. I actually found this little teeny Aspen Grove backcountry skiing zone that's just above my house, like a mile or probably 2 miles away, that I'd never skied before. I've been past it 100 times. And my wife and I went up there a few times this year and made laps. It's like 300 vertical feet and mellow. You could ski there in the highest avalanche danger. And it was so much fun. So that kind of, it just sort of opened my mind to like looking for new opportunities and new spaces, and they're there. You just got to discover them.
Yeah, totally. I agree. That's awesome. Yeah. Little nuggets like that are the best.
Awesome. Thanks, Jake.
Right on.
Yeah, Jake, thanks for the question. All right, I want to respect Chris's time. He asked for an hour. We are approaching an hour. We are here with Chris Davenport on Shred Space. It's been a really amazing conversation. Chris, I just want to say thank you for being here. Thank you for opening up and being vulnerable with us. And are there any parting words you'd like to leave us with?
Well, I want to thank you for inviting me. This has been an honor. I love talking about skiing. It's just been it's part of my DNA. It's part of who I am. And I can talk about it all day long. And we could do another hour about backcountry skiing. We could do an hour about equipment and product. We could do an hour about climate justice and social. I mean, all of these things are just so awesome and interesting and fascinating, and especially in the world we live in today. So I appreciate everybody's time and joining in. And if anybody has further questions, I certainly would love to engage with any of you. Either send me an Instagram direct message. I'm at Steep Skiing on Instagram, or I don't really look at Facebook anymore at all, but I suppose you could message me there somehow. You can find me on the internet. But thanks, and be safe out there. Have fun, and look forward to connecting again, Grant, in the future.
Absolutely, Chris. Would love to chat with you again, and maybe in maybe next ski season we'll put together some more chats around backcountry and whatnot. So we're going to close up the show. Once again, there's a Shred Space here. There's a club campfire conversations on Shred Space. Corinne, before we go, do you want to let folks know about any upcoming programming? And once again, give the folks up here on the stage a follow. If you like what we're doing in here, it will help you to see more rooms of what we're doing. But Kareen, what is coming up on Shred Space this coming week?
Oh, I wasn't unmuted. Let's see. Wednesday, March 24th, we have a free ride world tour for Verbier at 10 p.m. on Eastern time, so 9/8/7 on West Coast time. And on Thursday, we have Mark Sullivan's chat on extreme. What's it called? Help me out, Grant. Trying to blank.
Sorry, is that the Close Calls in the Backcountry?
Yes.
Close Calls in the Backcountry on Thursday night with Mark Sullivan.
Thursday night.
Awesome. I'm going to be on that. That's
Friday at 10:30 a.m. Ski and Snowboard Chat Morning Edition is yours. And then Friday at 4, we have the Greats at Snowboard Greats at 4.
Awesome. So if you're all looking for a different experience, maybe you want to connect in a group, Friday morning is a good time to do that, or Thursday night with Mark's show. So it's a good time to build community, meet people. So definitely look around for the Shred Space rooms. And thank you all for coming here tonight. And have a great evening, everyone.
Good night. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, everyone. Good night. Be safe. Love you. Bye.
Bye.